Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What's up, Square Pimp Brigade? On this episode, we have comedian Jacob Williams from Wildin' Out and from Adam Devine's House Party, Comedy
Colbert Central,
all kinds of stuff. We're here to discuss taking up space, dating as an introvert, getting a way out of your shyness, and buying jewelry after the breakup. We also are going to put Jacob through my patented plan, and we're going to check back with him too. This is going to be awesome, and we do listener mail on the Patreon. Don't forget to sign up for the Patreon. That's www.patreon.com/manschool202.
Right. Patreon.com is where we do all the bonus episodes, including listener mail. So join us over there, and it helps us keep the show going. At patreon.com, and this episode on the Patreon exclusive episode, we talk about dealing with aggressive girls, breaking up with a stalker, and then what you can do to get a girl to talk to you online on whatever dating apps. But also, each of us does consultations. If you want a consultation as far as dating advice, sex advice, any life advice from me, you could email me at advicefromharry@gmail.com. That's where all my info is at, and we can set up a consultation. Dante, if people want a consultation with you, how do they reach you?
DanteNero.com. Click on consult. You can book it right there. I love y'all, man. Let's get into it.
I'm not an alpha male. I'm not a beta male either. I'm just a better man. Better man. Well, put your happiness first, because if you don't, they won't.
Yo, what's up, y'all? GYBB, get your balls back. WWDD, what would Dante do? The Sexual Revolutions being podcasted, and I am excited. Now, I know I've said that 500 times before, but this time I mean it, because this is a special show. We got a special guest in the building, but first and foremost, Harry, what's popping? What you got going on?
What I got going on? I'm busy trying to be the greatest that's ever been.
It's difficult.
And
it
takes a lot of time. You don't realize how time consuming that is.
It does. It's crazy. Yeah. Ridiculous. I know your lady had a little birthday thing.
That's right. So, hanging out.
I know you've been doing that.
We had to stop our fuck session to do this show, just so you know.
To come on.
Yeah. But that's how this works. You know, I stopped.
You're a dedicated dude.
And then once we're done, I'll go right back to it. That's all right. I'll drink a Gatorade and get right back in it.
You stopped at 6.5, and then you just pulled out. Your pull-out game was crazy. All right. Fair enough. Let me introduce our guest. He has a list of credits, Wildin' Out, Stephen Colbert, Adam Devine's comedy.
House Party.
So much shit. Give it up for Jacob Williams, y'all. Give it up for Jacob Williams. What's going on, brother?
Thank you. No one clapped, but thank
you. Yeah, it's fine. I'll put it in post. Don't worry about it.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah. No, it's fucked up now, but don't worry about it.
Oh, my bad. Oh, thanks, everyone, for clapping. I appreciate it.
Thanks for doing this, man. I appreciate you, giving us some time to chat with us a little bit. I was looking at a lot of your stuff on online and stuff, and man, multi-talented. It's annoying.
Oh, wow. Thank you. That's very nice. A lot of people would disagree with the talented part.
I doubt it.
Say it's annoying? That's weird. That's how they come back. They're like, I watched your clips, man. I gotta say, pretty annoying.
Pretty annoying that you do so much well. It's ridiculous. I really appreciate you doing the show. How long you been doing comedy?
About, it'll be 15 years in September, this next month, I guess. So I started in 2007 in a small college town where I was going to college. And I was going to Beloit College in Wisconsin. I was really obsessed with comedy, but I thought I was like too quiet or shy to do it. But then I saw my friend try an open mic
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, and then I realized you don't have to be like amazing at it right away. So I signed up and gave it a shot.
You're like, he sucks. I can do that.
Something like that. But no, a great guy, but he ended up quitting comedy. But I just kind of got hooked and just kept doing open mics, and then did it in Chicago for a while and eventually moved here a few years
ago. Chicago's a great town. Chicago's a great market to start in too, especially. It's a very supportive community from what I understand out there.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of good stage time and improv and stand-up and places to do stand-up. It's fun, yeah.
And how long you been in New York?
I've been in New York about 8 years now. I came in like 2014. Uh-huh. And yeah, it's been fun. I love New York. It's just some of the best comics ever. I always feel like I have a lot of work to do whenever I see a show here. I'm like, oh man.
You and countless others. It just seems like the best of everybody. The best of everywhere. Jesus, what's wrong with my camera, Harry?
You're good. I thought you were good.
Yeah, it looks good. It
looks foggy.
Oh, it wasn't from this end, but anyway.
Maybe it's, I don't know. What the fuck? You don't see a foggy in the corner?
Oh, that's the green screen. It's not that it's foggy. It's the lights coming through. Yeah. That's too much sunlight from the side of the rain, so it's not so much foggy. It looks like you're burning in a fiery hell of green.
Oh, okay. All right. This is great. Fantastic.
You know, they say it's red, but the Bible was rewritten many, many times. Hell could be green.
Who knows? Yeah. Who knows? it's almost like the best of everybody comes here, and then it becomes, you know, it's kind of a thing where, you know, as you get to a certain level, everybody comes here to see where they really measure up, you know. So, and I mean everybody from, I mean, Dave Chappelle, Kevin Hart, everybody, you know. Yeah. You come here and you find out, as good as you are wherever you're from, you come here and you're like, okay, now I know I got work to do.
Yeah, definitely.
But that's great, because it forces everybody. You to get better, though, because it's better to do that than to be the big fish in a small pond and then just in life. But that's within life in general. You know, you can only get better by competing against the best, even in dating. Like, I know that happens with you know, somebody will be the hottest person in their hometown, you know, like a Nebraska 10 or whatever. And then you come out to, you know, LA or Miami and you're like, oof, boy, I'm a 5 at best out here. And then you got to develop a personality or you get
Shane Gillis has a joke where he was like, dude, I was killing it where I was from. He's like, I came here, I'm a 5.
I like that Shane thinks he's a 5. It's very generous, Shane. It's a very loose 5. He's very funny. His special is very funny.
Yeah, it is. He killed it.
His bit about fucking Trump moms. Let's just just follow. Yeah. Look it up on YouTube.
MAGA moms.
MAGA moms.
Shout out to Shane. Here's the interesting. It's like you are kind of a reserved dude, and I've been talking about something on the show, but like what's funny is I've seen your stuff online. It does that give you an outlet to just kind of just let loose, or is it a character? Is it what, like, how do you
I mean, a lot of people I think that I'm doing a character on stage, because I can be very shy and awkward, or like kind of self-conscious. And then they'll meet me off stage and I'll be like, oh wow, that's really how you talk, I guess. And it's kind of a problem sometimes, because I guess, yeah, a lot of the times I think I just am not very confident. And it can work if it's like going well, like if the jokes are landing and they're like, oh, it's a character. But then if it's not going well, it looks like I might seem like very inexperienced on stage, or in other situations I like just seem out of, I like,
does is it a thing of when when it doesn't go well, people are like, that was pretty good for your first time, and you're like,
yeah, exactly. Like, after 15 years of doing comedy, it might still seem like I'm doing comedy for the first time if it's a rough night. So yeah, it's kind of a problem sometimes, because I feel like I don't naturally, like, okay, so like when I was taping Wild Not the last time, I was like getting coffee on the set, I had the whole like uniform on, I was about to tape like an episode for my 11th season, and the person working there was like, what do you do, are you like a production assistant? And I was like, no, I'm in the cab. But I guess I just have the energy of a production assistant still, so I don't know what to do about that. But
you do have
what's also interesting is that when you are going against those guys who are much bigger personalities, you kill it because it really comes out of nowhere. You know what I mean?
I think it's because people expect so little of me that any joke I put together.
Well, I think they expect you to kind of be timid. And then when you come at them, it blows them away because it's so sharp and so dead on. You know what I mean?
Oh, thanks.
One of the things that I've been talking about on the show a lot is, you know, because this is a relationship show and we kind of talk about that you know, I've been talking about taking up space, like the comfort of taking up space. Now, where do you think the shyness comes from? And let me ask you that first.
Yeah.
Shy or are you just kind of low key? Which is it?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I definitely feel kind of shy still. I mean, I would say I've like made a lot of improvements in that department. Like I used to be so in my head that just, you know, afraid to have any type of conversation at all, which made doing comedy the first few times really especially scary. But yeah, I still have a lot of social anxiety. It's still tough for me to like start conversations and that kind of thing. So yeah, I think my parents were just, you know, they're maybe a little socially awkward too. So like they kind of like spending time on their own too. So I feel like growing up, I was a little frustrated with maybe not having as many like social situations to be in as I wanted to be to like really learn how to be more social. So that's something I've kind of worked at as an adult and going to therapy and doing comedy and like stand up improv and stuff like that. I think I've like kind of come a long way with that, but at the same time, I definitely still get like very self-critical at times, and then it's like tough for me to like initiate conversations. I can usually get along really well with people if I have like, you know, someone there to help start the conversations or things like that. Yeah, once it's going. But yeah, I guess sometimes I do feel like maybe I make not the best first impression or something because I might seem very shy or awkward or something. So I don't know.
Well, I mean, like being on Wildin' Out, I mean, because there's
a lot of energy.
Yeah, a lot of personalities and stuff. How does that, I mean, how do you fit in with that? I mean, because we are talking about this 11th season. There's a lot of people that didn't survive one or two seasons, you know, and weren't able to make their mark. How do you feel like you made that? How did you, or is it, because I'm, from what I understand, I know some people that have done it. I mean, I'm really good with, why am I blanking now? But it doesn't matter. There's people I know that, you know, are huge personalities, and how do you jive with them?
Yeah, I think, that show, I actually feel kind of at home at this point, because it's like, I think maybe because some of the people are so, my friends on there, some of them are like very charismatic and so loud that I feel like I get along well there, because it's like, I don't really have to worry about like breaking the ice so much because everyone's just already making jokes, and then I can kind of like throw in a joke here and there too. But I guess I just have a lot of fun doing it. So I really enjoy like trying to think of stuff that's funny or trying to come up with stuff. And it kind of like is nice that I have like a little bit of a different style than other people. So sometimes that can like,
Work to the advantage.
Yeah, for sure. So I just feel very lucky to get to do it.
What was your favorite situation where that low key aspect really caught people off guard? Is there one particular line or one bit or something that really nobody saw coming because of your delivery and tone?
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, I think like my first season in like 2013, I did a rap battle with Nick Cannon. Wow. And it was a long time ago, but I think I said something like, "You're married to Mariah, so you have a lot of clout, but does it ever bother you when she puts you in timeout," or something like that. But I think he was just like not expecting me to like rap battle him at all.
Rap battle. Yeah.
Because like everyone just thought I was like just nice offstage. I guess now that I'm saying it, I'm not super proud of that one in particular, but
I can see that it's funny. It's always funnier when it comes from a character that you don't expect it to. Like the juxtapositions are always funnier. It's also why, you know, some of the comedy tropes work, like the cursing grandma is always funny. because you're just not, you don't expect that from a certain aspect of society sometimes, which isn't the case. I mean, we're used to it, but it still catches people off guard and it's fun.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think like Matt Rife one time said, I looked at a rap battle that I looked like Jared from Subway, and I said that he looked like he just got molested by Jared from Subway or something. Like that. I don't know. If that's I can't really think of any good example, but yeah, it's just yeah, I guess people just don't expect me to say mean things. So
Jacob, like this, would you consider yourself an introvert? I guess, would that be a fair assessment or no? How do you, not that you have to classify it, but. Would you consider yourself more introverted, obviously, than extroverted?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, it's weird because, I don't know what the term for it is, if it's like an ambivert or what, but I do feel very introverted. But then I also really like being around people. Obviously, I love doing comedy.
How does that affect, let's say, like dating or sex life for you, out of curiosity? Do you carry it with the same perspective and demeanor, or is it different for you?
I think that can be sometimes tougher in terms of starting the conversations with like dating and things like that. I feel like, sometimes it's like tough for me to meet people, where we like connect and everything. I've definitely had some good dating experiences and stuff, but also, I guess it's like tough for me to sometimes like be assertive in those situations or kind of approach like people that I'm interested in or
how's
like that.
How's the wilding out groupies, because they seem to be a little more maybe a little more aggressive, maybe
the fan base is general, you're saying?
Godfrey's Godfrey's a real good friend of mine, and Rip Michaels is really cool with me. Yeah. And I knew Rip before I was doing comedy in Brooklyn. And one of the things that Godfrey said, because Godfrey just did a couple of seasons, he did a bunch of episodes. And he was like, look, it's more about having fun. Like, it's not that you get these amazing lines or whatever. It's more about just kind of being in a situation where they feel like you're having fun. And if you're not having fun, then one of the things about it's weird, because I find myself whenever I'm doing stand-up and I'm auditioning and it matters to me, it always sucks. I've been doing it 22 years, so there's a certain level of proficiency that I'm gonna have no matter what, but it's never good enough. It's only when Nick DiPaolo said this, rest his soul.
Nick DiPaolo.
rest his MAGA soul. He said, you don't really get funny until you stop giving a fuck. And it's like anytime I've auditioned for something where in my mind it mattered, whether or not I did well, I've always had not a bad time, but the sets never go the way I want it to. So, you know, being comfortable. I mean, I remember Godfrey telling me, like, they just want you to, because it's that type of fun, that energy is contagious. People want to see you succeed. When you're in the audience, they want to see you succeed, and they want to, they want it to be enjoyable. And if you're enjoying yourself, even if you're bombing, you can bomb in a way that it's fun. You know what I mean? It's fun for everybody, and they don't want to feel tense. So it's funny, like with women, I think, although there are some times when women want to see you fail, they're looking to cut your legs out because of, their father touched them, or I don't know, whatever. They didn't get enough hugs or whatever. But I mean, I think, one of the things that I've been thinking about, like I go through periods of times in relationships and just thinking about stuff. And I also do like relationship counseling. You can check me out at DanteNero.com and you can get a one-on-one consultation. But one of the things that I've been talking about is taking up space. And me and Harry has been talking about that for years.
Yeah.
Harry's a really nice guy. And so he doesn't want to be an asshole. You know what I mean? Like, nice guys never want to be an asshole. And so when they don't want to be an asshole, they don't ever really want to.
It was difficult for me to take up space or just to get what I deserve, or ask for even just nice things, just things that I deserve, you know, not even like, not even asking for things that are, I just don't even like, I didn't even like talking to waiters or waitresses really. Like I just didn't want to engage with people for whatever reason, just cause I guess maybe because of my upbringing, I think part of it was like, you know, everything was a problem or everything was also very pessimistic. Mm-hmm. So the less you talk to people, the better, the less problems there'll be. And that became a weird self defense mechanism. But, you know, it's at some point I had to get past that because it's I was to the point where, you know, Dante was saying I didn't want to be an asshole. And Dante had to explain to me that no matter how much I would try to be an asshole, I will never be an asshole. My best attempt at being an asshole would probably be like a four.
It's sort of confident and assertive, yeah. Like his. Oh my God, I'm way out off base, right? And that's to everybody else, it's perceived as comedy, calm and assertive. If that much, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, oh, there you are, you know what I mean? And it's almost like the assholes.
But there's another thing that would happen, which is I was very like calm and quiet. But then when I would snap, I go to like 9 or 10 the other way, like very intense after it goes too far. But then that's too much. Right. So I also hated that. Like I would. And then I had to manage that aspect where now it's a little bit easier where if someone is kind of being an asshole or overstepping their bounds, I'm able to confidently go, no, that's not what it's going to be. And, you know, people I also find double down. It's very interesting. Like assholes. Another thing they'll do is they'll double down. Yeah. And then you have to learn to double down, which is you're not going to ignore what I just said. Let's get back to what I need you to do, that type of thing. But that took practice, a little bit of practice of getting out of my shell and understanding. But also it became easier the more I did it. The same thing for me with talking to women. It became easier the more it didn't end in failure because there was nothing to end in failure. So it was just practice and you're like, oh, okay, nothing bad is going to happen as a result of this. But that was my experience with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. And I think I still would like to be more assertive, but it used to be like at a place where I like had trouble bringing up anything at all. And my therapist kind of pushed me to like, you know, confront like my roommate at the time about stuff that was bothering me. And it was kind of scary because then my roommate would get really mad at me because since I hadn't done it before, he felt like I was like doing a personal attack on him or something. But now we're like
was just his way of manipulating the situation in his favor that he's been manipulating in his favor all along. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, what's interesting is one of the things that we talk about is empathy. And it's interesting how somebody who's an asshole will be an asshole, consistently be an asshole, and then when you call them on it, you're like, whoa, wait a minute, what do you mean, or when you give, you don't confront them, but you give it back to them, and then they're like, whoa.
9 times out of 10, they'll always say it's a misunderstanding and try to either, which is still an asshole thing to do, to try to put it on you, like, wait, you must be misreading this.
Yeah.
That's not what I was doing. I wasn't like, that is what you're doing. The next level is with Dante, which I like, which I've started doing too. Like, no, yeah, you were. Like, I don't have a problem with you. Like, yeah, you do. I don't have a problem. Well, then I have a problem with you, FYI, because I do have a problem, that type of thing. Yeah, because people will double down and they'll do an asshole thing, which is to rile you up. And then when you get riled up, be like, hey, where's this coming from? Yeah. Like, you know exactly where it's coming from. Don't be an asshole.
Yeah. It's a weird thing because the nice guys. So, you know, like in the course of doing comedy 20, 22 years, and I've seen guys blow up and really get famous and guys get a lot of money and whatever. But what I find is I don't know if I could, if my percentages is right, but I would say 90% of the people are miserable. You know, they get this money and there's this, they take on this persona and then they're miserable in the context because they're not really comfortable with themselves because
they never addressed anything that they were dealing with. They just are financially successful, but being financially successful is not addressing the emotional issues you have. It's just adding money, which adds more more complexities.
More more money, more problems. I'm looking at the clock. We got to take a break. We'll be right back.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Yo, what's up, Square Pimp Brigade? Thanks for hanging in. We're back
with Man School 202.
One of the things that we do, like when we're, it's funny, it's like what we call it, what psychologists call it, exposure therapy. So like when you talk about that thing where you're you have problems, you know, approaching situations or kind of breaking the ice or approaching, is like one of the things, like when I put guys through my system, I have a system where I put guys through it to just make them more social. And one of the things we do is I call it laying the five bricks. Laying the five bricks is that you go out and you pay five women a compliment every day. Mm-hmm. Nothing sexual. You don't only do it to the women that you want to have sex with. And it has to be honest. It has to be. So even if you got, even if you're talking to Whoopi Goldberg, it's like you have beautiful teeth. You know, like you have to find something that you honestly can compliment in a real way. And what the first stage, so there's different phases that I will take a guy through. One of the first phases is to do that. And we do that like five women a day, every day for 8 weeks, right? So if you, I think it's, I forgot the number, but I think it's 108, comes out to like 185 women in the course. It's, it's 35 women a day, something like 185 women in the course of 8 weeks. And what happens is I know pimps that don't talk to that many women in that course of time. You know what I mean? That's a lot of, but
8 weeks is 280 if you're doing five bricks a day. Yeah.
Okay. So, but what happens is the first week it takes them hours to get through the five because they're, you know, you know that anxiety, like when somebody jumping double dutch and they're trying to jump in the rope and they're like, because the bottom line is that they, deep down, you don't think that you're worthy. Like you don't think that you're good enough to just jump in. And so one of the things that I say all the time is that, you know, how does a woman know if you're worthy? They know that you, I mean, how does a woman know about you? How does somebody get to know Jacob? Mm-hmm. And if you really think about that, you tell them who you are. They have no idea who you are. So their first impression and their last impression is what you give them. Now they're going to interpret that, those, whatever you give them. But when you, I was doing a thing with this guy and I was explaining it to him. I don't know if you play any poker?
Actually, yeah, I got super into poker.
Really?
Over the pandemic, which I'm trying to cut back because I went to some underground games and lost a lot of money. And actually, I was thinking about this earlier when you were saying how, like, comedy, it's like good to be around people that are way better than you. But then with poker, it's like when you do that, you're like losing a lot of money, unfortunately.
Yeah. But yeah. But the, you know, the poker tell.
Yeah.
You know, guys get really, and young guys in poker who I have a friend of mine who's a professional poker player, Clayton Fletcher, shout out to him. He's a great comic too. But one of the things is that everybody, like, truth always comes out. The truth of the matter of what you think. And as much as some people are better at lying about it, some people, you know, over-exaggerate. Anytime I see that over-exaggeration with a person is super loud or super, it's always reflective of this insecurity that they're trying to overcompensate so that they're not exposed. But just talking, like, so three things that I think are the most attractive thing. I mean, most guys would believe muscles and, a chiseled jaw. And I always say, you know, if you were dating a Victoria's Secret model and she's a straight 10, right? But she has herpes, right? She's no longer a 10. You know what I mean? Like that.
That'll definitely knock off a couple points on the scoreboard.
You can cut that down to like a 3, if that, right? And so the things the things that are most important are the things that nice guys value the least, because it comes so easy for them to be, and those things that, being kind and generous and loyal and truthful and empathetic. But those are the most important things. And those are the things, once you get past that initial, initial introduction, and once there's an attraction there, then your six pack and your cum gutters don't mean anything if you're, you're a horrible person,
Yeah.
But on a base level, I mean, you've been doing comedy 15 years, so I don't know. Do you still get nervous or no when you go up?
Sometimes, yeah. I don't get as nervous. I used to get super nervous every time. Now, I don't really get that nervous most of the time. I will get nervous for stuff like, I did a show with Rube Michaels at Barclays Center recently, like stuff like that.
That was the thing where T.I. got booed off stage.
Yeah, and I had like a rough set that night as well. Yeah, yeah.
Thank God for T.I. huh, Jake?
Yeah, that really is. I thought I had a rough set, and I was like, okay, yeah. Could have been worse.
No one was talking about Jacob. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I was really glad I wasn't finished.
I didn't hear about it, but I fucking sure as shit heard about T.I.
I should probably stop telling people I didn't do it, because no one would have known.
Nobody knows. Just say you played the Barclays.
So, okay, yeah, that's it. I got a standing ovation, but no, I don't know. I definitely get nervous for certain shows if it's like something like that I haven't done. But and then, like you said, like, yeah, an audition or something, I can definitely sometimes get in my head. So yeah, I'm trying to like figure out how to be less attached to like the outcome and those dating or audition situations.
To be honest, it was the Barclay, but it was Brooklyn, the Barclay Center, which is, first of all, that audience, Brooklyn is, in general, it's not that, they're looking for you to trip. They're looking for, in fact, they might be trying to trip you in a sense. But it's like, how do you connect? I mean, comedy is not really meant to be in that, in that space, because it's so big. Like, how do you connect with people, and how do you, people are getting beers and getting, pulled pork sandwiches, and it's just, and people are talking and smoking weed, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how do you connect with them, especially?
This is exactly how they describe it at the RNC convention. This is how they think every barbecue is like. Every just barbecue. How you described it.
Pulled pork and
people out there eating weed. Their pulled pork sandwiches and smoking their reefer,
smoking their grass, right? But it's especially if your comedy is, if you're a little, you pull back and there's nuance. To your comedy. I mean, there's a certain type of comic that's gonna do well in that space, and there's certain styles of comedy that just doesn't jive unless you out there in their face making them pay attention, and you have to take up big space, and you'd have to do that in that audience if it was in a comedy club, much less to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
I think they sold out that night too.
Yeah, yeah. It was pretty crazy.
Huge and distracting and so on and so forth. So but what's interesting is that the things that nice guys possess, it comes to them so naturally, just being loyal and kind and generous and empathetic and stuff. And women are like, no, you don't. You want the idea of this danger, but then once you're in this relationship, if this person is selfish or abusive or inconsiderate or all those things, then you're miserable in this relationship. And so one of the things that has to change in terms of, you know, just in terms of how you present yourself, is you have to understand what your value is and how, you know, how valuable the things that you do. Like, I'd rather have a dude like you as a friend in a minute. Like, if I, you know, I know if I'm friends with you and I'm loyal to you and we're friends, I got a couch to move. You'll help me. You know what I mean? You'll go, yeah, I'll come through and help. Whereas somebody who's loud and obnoxious, man, I ain't moving no goddamn couch, you know? So it's an interesting thing. And then when you start to reassess the things that you possess, the characters that you possess, and you realize, first of all, how rare it is to have. So we talk about the, you know, on the show, we have an acronym as ACE, which is authenticity, credibility, and empathy. So telling the truth, saying what you mean, meaning what you say, showing up when you say you're going to show up, and then having the ability to see the person that you're socially, the social dynamics of dealing with somebody, what they're going through. And that is the most important thing in any relationship, be it male, female relationship, romantic, family, otherwise. And when one person is that and the other person isn't that, you're just not going to have a healthy relationship. And so having a guy talk to 5 women a day, the therapy of that is to understand first, the first thing that they understand is, wow, I was so worried about this happening or getting cursed out or this. And that never happens. I mean, and even if that does happen, it's so minimal. It's never what you think. At the most, I've had any guy that I put them through my system. The most that they've said to me was that they may have paid a compliment and the girl didn't respond. And she just kept going. So never in a million years is that what your worst case scenario in, you know, especially when somebody's introverted and they're not a customer, that's not what you perceive in your head, you know?
Yeah. That reminds me of like that old Adam Sandler joke where his friend's like, you should ask her out. The worst she can say is no. And then he asks her out and she's like, get away from me, you freak. And he's like, I think you're breaking the rules. but yeah, I always think about like the worst case scenarios, but that's a really good point. Yeah, I definitely want to try more stuff like that, because yeah, I still do feel shy talking to strangers and stuff.
Okay, we need to take a break here, so just hang on and we'll be right back.
It was going hard, but look, we got to pay a few bills and we're going to come right back.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hey, thanks for hanging in there. We are back with Man School 202. What is the sort of craziest or silliest thing you've done for love or in an attempt to be in love?
I don't know. I mean, a lot of it is more like a lot of my times I'm more just get in my head and leads more to like inaction. And that's like the most frustrating thing. I did have, before I went to therapy, I had a tough breakup where we weren't gonna see each other again, but she like convinced me to buy her this like gold ring for her birthday after the breakup, because it was she'd like gotten me stuff on my birthday, and then her birthday was like gonna be a month after the breakup, and I was just felt like kind of guilted or pressured into like ordering it for her and sending it to her, because I was just like in a very pleasing mentality.
She was saying that like she brought that up as if to say like,
yeah, hey, she's like, I want this like $225 gold ring.
Who initiated the breakup?
Well, that was a situation where I think I was initiating the breakup, but I was like having trouble like articulating it, and so we were kind of just like talking about it, and then she ended up saying that she just wanted to ended after a while, but I was like the one that kind of initiated the breakup, I guess. And
so you initiated it and then stayed in it long enough so that she could initiate it and not kind of take the heat.
Yeah, I was just like, I had trouble making it final. I was, yeah. I like started the conversation, but it was just had trouble like kind of saying what I wanted. So.
Yeah, so I was talking to a dude and he wanted to initiate a breakup, and what he was saying to me is that he'll want to break up, but he'll usually, you know, kind of hit into it, but he waits for them to break up with him.
Yeah, basically. I used to do that.
Yeah. And I said to him, well, what makes you not care about you and your feelings so much that you won't even ask for what it is you want, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so if you're initiating, what was the thing that made you want to initiate the breakup? I would imagine selfishness, because somebody who wants you to buy a ring after you break up is clearly somebody who's insensitive and selfish. I mean, and that comes through, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, yeah, I feel like I'm not sure exactly what it was altogether, but I felt like it was just not really clicking or something. But it was a very, I did feel really conflicted about it, because I think I had like more chemistry with this person than like anyone I dated and stuff like that. So I was, there was like things I really loved about her and stuff. And so it was, so I guess that made it confusing, but then I was like, just kind of felt like frustrated.
Well, what were the things that you thought you had in common with her?
I guess she, like part of it was we just got along really well, and she had like a very, I thought like a super funny kind of sense of humor, like perspective on a lot of things in a way where I thought she was like funnier than a lot of like comedians I knew and stuff, and just a very, but like had no interest in being in showbiz or anything. But she was just very like, I guess she was very like emotionally intelligent, which I really liked.
What did you not like though?
I don't know. I guess I think I was just kind of not ready for a relationship. I think I was just kind of was like, felt like I was missing out on maybe like dating more people something.
Some extra.
I mean, I don't know. I think maybe I just hadn't had as much dating experience.
You wanted to smash some more puss. There was extra puss around.
Yeah, I don't know if I phrased it that way, but yeah,
I mean, you got to get that extra puss. If it's around, you don't want it to go to waste, because it will expire.
I'm looking at Jacob's bio and it says wanted to smash more puss.
Yeah,
I mean, that it's in writing, and that's, I mean, it's got to be true, right? It's on the internet.
It's in your handwriting, yeah, though, Dante. That's the thing. yeah, in all fairness,
I have to really edit my Wikipedia. That's so a lot of date, but yeah,
they do let anyone edit anything in there. So
so it was like you wanted to kind of date and kind of explore some other shit, and
I guess so. Yeah,
so that's interesting that, you know, for me that's interesting that you would want something else, and what happens is, and this is when I talk about not taking up space, it's almost like, you know, like if I was counseling you, I would ask you, why do you think that somebody who doesn't really make you happy, why do you think it's more important for them to be happy than you? I mean, you should be the most important person in your life, you know?
Yeah. Totally. Oh, no, sorry. I don't want to interrupt. But I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's a good point. I think my parents are also very, like, they were raised very Catholic and raised me very Catholic. And there was like, yeah, so I think I just kind of got used to this thing of like guilt and like you should feel guilty about things, or like I just kind of learned that I don't know, I think like a lot of my comedy is self-deprecating, and that's also just kind of a mindset I learned from my parents too, where like it was a lot about just like not trying to not inconvenience other people, or not trying to ever come close to like bragging, or like it was being played.
I mean, I grew up Catholic. I was an altar boy in the whole shit, and you always get that guilt, like you don't want to stir the pot unless, of course, you're fucking kids. Then it's okay. You know, we don't want to make waves unless we're fucking the kids. Then that's okay.
Then there's a lot of waves. A lot of waves.
It's waves heard around the world. So it's interesting that, and then not, because the bottom line is, if you don't, you know, one of the things that I always say is that a man has to put his happiness first. You have to put your happiness first, because if you don't, she won't. Because she's getting a cue from you, from how you treat yourself. So you're telling her that I'm not worthy of your sacrifice, or I'm not worthy of your kindness, or I'm not worthy of your civility or your loyalty, because I keep putting you first. And the other thing is that a man in general, like if you're dating a woman and your woman is unhappy, we feel like failures. Like we feel like that's our responsibility. So, you know, even when you're married, if your kids are starving, it's your fault as a man. If your woman is unhappy, it's your fault. If she's sexually unsatisfied, it's your fault. If she's unhappy with things, even when she's unhappy and her unhappiness is irrelevant to you just because she's an unhappy person or whatever,
you still feel responsible if you're not doing enough.
So the importance of putting your happiness first is because when it comes to her happiness, is encompassed in your happiness. Because how do you consider yourself a good partner if your woman is unhappy? You know, if your woman is actually unhappy and you're her dude, then you're going, hey, it's almost like you're going, I failed on so many levels so much, you know? So you got to put your happiness first, and then everybody's happy, because her not being happy makes you unhappy anyway. So you work towards that anyway. You know, I'm always fascinated, I guess I shouldn't be, because I was like that to a certain extent. You know, I was, my mom was always like, share your toys and be nice to people and stuff like that. And I still kind of, you know, advocate that. I feel like I'm a pretty generous person, but I've learned that a lot of people don't have the emotional acuity to deal with somebody who is kind and civil and loyal and truthful and empathetic. And so they're just abusive because they're incapable of thinking in terms of that, you know, hurt people. And so you're in this kind of situation where you want to give and you want to be thoughtful and everything, and you're with somebody who doesn't give a fuck about it.
All right, I'm gonna have to put a stop to this just for a second. Because I don't know if we'll get another opportunity the way this is going. Manschool 202, we'll be right back with more.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
All right, we're back. Manschool 202, still in progress, never stopping. When I ask you, what did you love about, I mean, were you in love with her or no?
Yeah, definitely. I was definitely in love with her, and it was very tough to get over it. I mean, I still, I don't know. Feel like
what did you love about connection. Her?
I think we just, we just kind of felt really connected and had, you know, we're just like able to communicate really well. And we're just very compatible in a lot of ways, and just like she was very in the moment, which is something I struggle with sometimes, and I'm always trying to get better at that, but she was like very present, and we just had a lot of fun. I guess
she didn't have a bunch of pussies.
I hadn't had a ton of dating experience at the time, right. So it was like, so I think I was like always a little thinking like, oh,
thinking
man,
about
like,
what's around the corner.
But
how
yeah,
old
which,
were you when you hooked up with her? How old are you now?
I'm 33 now, and this is, I guess, a few years ago now. I don't know, maybe like 4 or 5 years ago.
What's your body count, Jacob?
Oh, like how is it, like how many women I've had sex with? I think it's around like 45 or so.
That ain't bad. That's not bad at all. That's pretty
pretty damn good.
Pretty damn good there.
Is a lot of that through stand-up? Does that make it easier? I mean,
yeah, I think a lot of that is through stand-up. Definitely a lot of that was like one-night stand type situation. I haven't had a lot of like long-term dating, but maybe a handful of long-term dating things.
So is it kind of the thing where you do stand-up and that's the place where you are perceived mostly as confident and stuff, and so it kind of rolls into that?
Yeah, I think it just makes it sometimes easier to meet people because, like I said, I have trouble like kind of starting conversations, but if someone has seen me on stage, then they might approach me or it might be easier to connect.
So they're approaching you and then you just kind of close the deal. Now, when they approach you, are you in your element or do you have to push yourself to close the deal?
It depends. It's like, yeah, I mean, sometimes there's people that approach me or I've had like friends that are kind of will help me as like kind of
a wing woman
or a wing man or whatever,
but like you like my friend likes you, that type of thing, or
yeah, like I have a friend who's really directed. I think it's just been a really good wing woman sometimes in a way where like I felt like I didn't do anything, but she just kind of convinced someone to like go home with me or something.
Somebody to fuck you.
But and I felt like I had nothing to do with it. But yeah, so I
mean, however you get there, that's a good wing person. I mean, the results are really all are, you know, however you get the points on the board as far as a wing
goes. So
they got the assist. I mean, that's a full assist right there. Primary assist.
For the record, Harry has never fucking wingman me. Never.
How can I wingman you? You don't need a wingman.
Yeah, but it would be nice if you.
Well, I could try.
If you. You know,
supposed to be a wingman. You're flying all over the place. It's hard to be your wingman. You're flying in and out of caverns and caves.
You're doing
buzzing the towers. Maverick. Yeah.
I'm top gun two in it.
If anything, it's going to get me killed. Being in your wake, it'll be, you know, I'll die like goose. So I got to be away from you when you're doing that. It's dangerous.
I don't know. We got to reassess this friendship, Harry. I'm just thinking about it. You've never fucking wingman me, you.
No, I haven't. I haven't wingman you. But again, when do you need it? I'm there. I'm there in case anything's gone down, but there's never been a need for me to go, hey, you should fuck this guy. They're like, what? I'm like, you should fuck this guy. They're like, all right, I know. All right, good then. My job here is done.
He already told me that.
Yeah. He already said he wanted to fuck me. I go, oh. All right, then you should listen to him.
I'm late again.
All right. Well, if you need me here, I'll be over here sipping my Diet Coke. If anything goes down, you just wave me on over.
I'm going to expect you to fucking wingman.
All right, let's give it the next time we go out. Now you're back on the market.
Yeah.
Officially.
Yeah, officially or not. Whatever.
Or not. Whatever still, you want to call it.
Still married. Whatever. She doesn't mind. I would say that's a great way to kind of do that. I mean, I feel like I want to help you, Jacob. I want to help you get over this. So I'm gonna let's.
Oh, thanks. Let's, I could probably use a little.
Let's keep in touch. I want to put you through my plan. Let's exchange numbers. I'm going to put you through.
Okay. Yeah,
you're
going to
be
true.
Smashing all that extra push you wanted that made you dump that other chick, you know?
Because we know that's what you want. Like, we can tell. You're too shy to say it, but what you want is extra puss.
Yeah, you didn't want to fucking waste your way with that chick who you're so compatible. You wanted to go and smash other puss.
Man. Oh, boy. Oh, God. I'm just like thinking about everyone.
Don't worry, Jacob. Dante will be out there, your wingman. I'll be your secondary wingman. It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
I have done that. Hey, you're not fucking him? You know? What do you mean? You're not fucking him? Why not? Well, I like him. I mean, but you like him? Yeah, I like him. Well, why are you fucking him? What's wrong with you? Mm,
I've actually seen that happen.
The clock is ticking, sweetie. Yo, can you hang out a little bit? We're gonna go to the Patreon app?
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, we could do Patreon. I figure we have some listener mail too. We could do over at Patreon as well.
Okay.
We'll see how we do this thing.
But I'm gonna get your number, Jacob. We're gonna go through the phases. Then I'm gonna have you back on.
Oh, that sounds great. Yeah, I would totally do that.
Dope. What do you want to plug? Anything you want to plug?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I've got a 1-hour stand-up comedy special free on YouTube, Unemotional Roller Coaster. It's streaming on audio platforms too. And then my social media is Mr. Jacob Williams. That's for like Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter and stuff like that. And I have jacobwilliamscomedy.com. I have some tour dates coming up, so please check those out. I usually post on Instagram about like local comedy shows around New York as well. So excited about all of that. I think I'm taping Wild Now next month too, so I'm looking forward to that.
Cool. Man, I appreciate you. Harry, talk to me real quick.
I am doing consultations, and if you wanted any sex and relationship advice, any life advice, you could email me at advicefromharry@gmail.com, and we can set up a consultation.
You can check me out. I do, you know, everybody knows. Google me, bitch. You know what it is. Consultation at DanteNero.com. Click on consult. You can book right on the page. Prices and everything are there. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram, all that shit. You know what it is. And don't forget to follow the Patreon. Please help us out with the Patreon. And Patreon helps us to keep doing the show. Like and subscribe on YouTube. The Patreon is www.patreon.com/manschool202. GYBB, get your balls back. WWDD, what would Dante do? The sexual revolution is being podcasted. Yo, I love y'all. Check us out on the Patreon side. We're going to dig in a little bit deeper and do some listener mail and some good shit. We are out.